How do I record? Oh, there, record. They have a new button, record. Okay.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay. They just updated. They have a new button right there for recording. Good morning. It's the 16th of April, and thank you for showing up. Thank you for, I know it's a very strange time, but I just saw the headline in the LA Times saying that there's a glimmer of hope in California. It looks like the tide is turning. So I didn't read the article. I didn't have time to read the article. But it is the 16th, and we're going to be finishing up stocks today. It's our last day with regard to stocks, and we're going to be discussing technical analysis, which, as I told you on Tuesday, we started it. I shouldn't have started it because we didn't get a whole lot done. But we'll review. Is not my cup of tea. And so if you really, really do want to learn about technical analysis, you're going to have to go someplace else. I'm going to do my best to tell you that it's borscht, kimchi, stinky stuff that will not serve you well in the long term. But, you know, who am I? You know, I'm just a goofball teaching an introduction to investments class. There are people who are making a whole lot more money than I am doing this stuff, and I wish them a lot of luck. And then we want to review for exam number three. Exam number three starts tonight. If anybody has any troubles at all with Canvas, please contact me. Don't wait until Sunday night, late Sunday night, because, you know, I get a lot of emails at 10, 11 o'clock at night, and I'm already usually in bed by then. So please try to do it before late Sunday night. And then if we have time, of course, in the review, it's open-ended. You can ask me about anything, about the Chapter 6 calculations. We could go over them, the Chapter 17 calculations, anything in Chapter 5, because we're going to review the stuff in Chapter 5, dividends, stock splits, different types of companies, types of investment strategies. All that stuff is fair game. Why? Because you need to know this. You need to know this. Inside out, upside down, left side, right. So if somebody in the middle of the night calls you up and asks you, how does the stock split work, you could explain it to them. Don't worry, I won't call you in the middle of the night. Okay, and then if we have time after that, we could take a look at something that will not be on the exam, and that is a more depth analysis of net present value and the internal rate of return. These are topics that you get in an upper level or a graduate level investment class. But the only tricky part about them is the calculations, but we're not going to do the calculations. That's why we have spreadsheets. We're going to show you a spreadsheet that does the calculation for you. And so let's continue. But first we need a good joke. Anybody have a good joke? An online joke? I've been getting little videos that are actually kind of funny, so I'm not sure if I want to show you the one funny video. But let's continue with our battle of the sexes jokes. We told you about the guy with the little red sports car, right? I think I told you twice. And I told you about the woman who was walking down the street and saw the parade. Well, let me tell you about this other woman who was an assassin. You see, the CIA wanted an assassin. So they put an advertisement in the newspaper and online now and got dozens and dozens of people who wanted to kill other people. And they whittled it down to four hardened killers. Three guys and one woman. As a last test of their steeliness, they each gave each of them a gun and put them in front of a door and said, in that room is your spouse. We want you to go in and kill your spouse. Yeah. and the guys looked and said, we're not going to kill our spouse. That's ridiculous. No, it's not going to happen. And the woman calmly took the gun, opened the door, walked in the room, closed the door, and you heard bang, 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 bang. And then you heard somebody screaming for help, and then silence. And she walks out the door. She's covered in blood. She points to the gun. She said, some idiot put blanks in the gun. So I had to beat him to death. It's a joke. Yeah, right. So guys, remember that. Remember that. Women, you know, they look meek and mild, but no. Be good. Be kind to the women. Because they'll, yeah, right. Okay, anyway, that was a joke. Okay, let's get started. Share the screen. And, oh, I forgot to protect against video bombing. Advanced. Only the host can share the screen. Okay, if we get Zoom bombed, just close the program and I'll start it up again, and then we'll have to do the waiting room, which takes a lot longer to get started, but at least we won't be video bombed by mutants, subhuman Trump supporters. Okay, so share the screen, and now we go to the browser and see that, hey, you know, we're hanging in there, down about 13% or so. And we have some companies in the red. In the black. We have a lot of companies in the red. But we still have Tesla, which has bounced back nicely, and Virgin Galactic Holdings, which has bounced back nicely because people do believe that space and the electric cars. I've been reading quite a bit about about Tesla and the other car manufacturers, and the other car manufacturers are basically not saying anything. You know, they're keeping their mouth shut, but at the same time, except for a couple, like Toyota and Honda, really are not doing a whole lot with electric cars. They're sticking mostly with hybrids, and they're still working on... Uh-oh. Something went wrong. Let's try it again. Reload. Yeah, I don't know why I still keep using Yahoo. But have you played with any others? I was playing with CNBC, and I thought, uh-oh, away from the shared application. Okay. Looks like my browser crashed. Oh no, it's back up and running. Okay, it looked like my browser crashed. Okay. So as I said, I don't know, folks. I don't know. We'll see what's going to happen. The Tesla's either going to be the biggest. The biggest stock in the world eventually, because it's going to own the entire automobile space, or they're going to flame out. But it doesn't look like there's anything in between. Okay, any questions, any thoughts? I want to sell anything? Nah, let's stick with it. Okay, so let's now go to chapter 8 and start this guy up. Present, audience, Q&A, and then close that. Close that. Hello. Oh, not closing it. Oh, there it goes. There goes my whole computer. Oh, boy. The PC needs to restart. Oh, darn. Oh, oh gosh. Okay, let's start Zoom. Oh, boy. Okay, folks, my apology. My computer just crashed, and it is slowly restarting. My PC ran into a program. I don't know if you can hear me, folks. Can you hear me? I'm on my phone now.
Yes.
Okay, my computer just crashed really hard. I've never seen this blue screen before where it said, your PC just had a really serious error. We need to collect information. So it's restarting. Oh, my goodness. So what am I going to do? I could start up another computer. Hang on a minute. Let me start up another computer and see if I can get that one working. Technology. Maybe I could... Okay, let's see. Any good jokes? Oh, it's still, this is taking forever to start up again. Let me see. What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? Well, I guess I have to wait. No. Let's try this machine. It's fine. It's starting to look. It's going to be a while. So let's discuss the exam. All right? Sorry. This machine's starting up. This is my wife's desktop machine. This PC's. Okay, so exam number three. There's going to be, just like exam number two, there's going to be a true-false multiple-choice section, and that will be on chapters 17, 7, and 8, but there's not a whole lot there. Make sure you have the study guides to study from. But there's not a whole lot there. We'll discuss financial statements and debts and assets and equity. It's very straightforward. And then a little bit of the psychology and behavior from 7 and 8. But we'll also ask you questions from chapter 5. So be sure to study chapter 5. Why? Because that's the meat of stocks, about dividends and indices, indexes, and investment strategies, stock splits, the markets, and the New York Stock Exchange, and NASDAQ, and then the pink sheets and bulletin boards. And so that stuff is the kind of stuff that you'll get on the Series 7 if you took the stockbroker exam or took the SEI exam, which is the pre-Series 7. We're going to discuss that today at the end of Chapter 8. If my computer ever starts up again, let's see if this machine started up. That machine's still booting. Oh boy, please wait. That just spins around and around and says, please wait. And then the second part of the exam will be a basically an assignment. It'll be a take-home exam, if you will, which will contain calculations from Chapter 17. Very straightforward. The calculations from Chapter 17 are very straightforward. Let's see if this is, I don't even think this machine has Zoom. Oh, darn it. This machine doesn't have Zoom. I have to download it. Oh, boy. I'm sorry, folks, about this technology. Let's go to my website. And so that will be, we can review the calculations in Chapter 17. And we can review the calculations in Chapter 6, because you cannot leave, okay? Dear students, you cannot leave Business 123 without knowing how to discount a future stream of cash flows. It's just that simple. Okay, so I have to download Zoom. Ugh. Start up Zoom. Okay, there goes my computer. Hang on a minute. There goes my computer. It's finally started. So run over to my computer. Okay, boom, boom, boom. Okay, it's still starting up. So that we can do, I'm sure we can do on my wife's machine. We can review Chapter 17 calculations. And review the Chapter 6 calculations. Some of you are doing very good with them. Some of you are having no problem with them. And others just didn't bother doing it. Didn't even bother doing the calcs. But you can't leave Business 123 without being able to do this. This is bad for my self-esteem. All right? All right, so now let's continue with technical analysis.
taking a while. Oh, she doesn't have a microphone.
Ugh.
Okay.
Yeah, she doesn't use it.
Okay, fine.
Oh, boy. All right, so here we go. Start up Chrome here.
I should have taken off my... How do I... Oh, jeez. Oh, you ever have one of those decades? Okay. How do I... I don't use my phone for this. How do I turn off the video? Recording... Not too good with the phone. Safe driving mode. Your video is stopped. Okay, now my my microphone. I don't want muted. I want my microphone done speaking. Now, now I'm speaking. Okay. Okay, my apologies. Join. Okay, wait. Okay, wait. There's my other computer. I'm going between two computers. Oops.
Restore. No, don't restore. Okay. My apologies. Okay, I'm back online with my computer. Okay, now I'm going to leave.
This meeting is being recorded.
Leave the meeting for my phone. Okay, back online. All right, hello, folks. How many people do I have in the class? Still, oh, I got 22 now. Tell me, I thought most of you would leave me. Is that Luis Marchan or Luis? Okay, Luis Marchan. Okay, sorry about that. Boy, it took a while for that machine to start back up again. All right, so let's now go to so I'm going to share the screen. Okay, I'm going to mute my video. Stop video. There we go. All right. So now we're going to restart everything. My apologies. But let's go to Drive. I have to log in. How do I log in? Go to Google Drive. So this is not my account that I use for the class, because what happens if I do that, then I'm in the edit mode, and I don't want to be in edit mode, because I want it to look like what you see when you go to my website, because I have full rights to all the documents, but you don't. But that's the way it's supposed to be, because I don't want you goofing with my documents. But you can copy them, download them as, and then you will have... Okay, so now here we go. Yay, team! Okay, my apologies. We're back to where we were. So now let's continue. So we had gone through the beginning of Chapter 8. So make sure these questions here, slides 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, there'll be at least 6, 7, there'll be at least one question or so about these common investor weaknesses. So make sure you got those on hand. And then we introduced the idea of fundamental versus technical analysis. And fundamental analysis is what we've been doing since chapter 5, 6, 17. And so now we'll take a look at the technical analysis. And technical analysis is a hodgepodge of ideas where we use these technical indicators to decide what's going to happen with the future price of a stock or the market as a whole. And we showed you one. We'll show you another gentleman here. This gentleman, we pick on him, but he's been around a long time. And he gets on television. So let's take a look at what he's doing. Now, here is an example of what they do. And again, you sign up for your free chart of the day, and then he wants you to sign up, eventually for $50 a month or whatever it is. But we're not interested in that. So we're interested in showing you what he's going to do. We showed you one last time. Let's show you another one today. So here are the Bollinger Bands, which I guess are just ideas of what the range is. And then he's going to show you the support and the resistance spots. And then there's the moving averages. These are the candlesticks here. So let's let him talk about it.
I'm Dan Fitzpatrick at StockMarketMentor.com on Saturday, March 8th. And in this video, I want to look at Pandora. Company's been down, or the stock's been down for a couple of days. They decided they're going to kind of, not provide the type of information that they were providing before, because there's a different way for advertisers to get it. You can read about that on the web. But what I like is the stock's still above the 50-day moving average. It's kind of drifting sideways here, these nice little moves here. What I want you to do is consider waiting for the stock to hit the 50-day moving average. Now, that can occur in a couple of different ways. The stock could actually pull back and then bounce, or the stock could drift sideways. Let's stretch this over a little bit. What I want you to do, and I talk about this in the weekend update for members, here's my operative word, patience. This is not a great time in the market to just be buying. There are fewer stocks that are at great entry points. A lot of them are in profit-taking mode. But this is the trend right here. So with the 50-day moving average moving higher, if the stock continues to drift sideways, that's a good thing. The stock has been trading on lower than average volume. As it moves sideways after a big move within an uptrend, this is what you want to see in stocks that you want to own. But as far as buying them, the better point is at the 50-day moving average. If the stock breaks out, we'll say above $40, $41, which it's done before, as far as these breakouts, I'm not counting this one because it's from a squeeze, but a breakout above the last high ultimately led to more pullbacks here. So if you get a breakout above here, I don't think there's as much upside momentum. I mean, consider what the next catalyst is. I can't find one. So just wait for a pullback to the 50, and I think you're good to go. And by the way, if it doesn't pull back to the 50, or if it pulls back to the 50 and then continues to move lower, that's called trading. It's just one of those things. So if you do buy it at the 50-day moving average, make sure you have a stop just below that level. If you had a stop below the level of the 50-day moving average the last time the stock hit it, you would not have been stopped out, and you'd have made some nice money. So let's see if we can do that again on Pandora. Okay, members, over to the weekend update. Lots of stocks to look at.
Okay. All right, so let's close that. Back to the slides. All right, now, did you see what he was doing? He made one mention about Pandora's, the company itself. About them changing some kind of something with regard to their advertising. Other than that, he made no mention about Pandora's earnings, about the market they're in, their customers, their competitors, their capitalization, all the things we looked at, the financial ratios. There's no dividends because it's a new company. Pandora is one of those streaming services, right? And so he is solely looking at these squiggles on a line on in his software, which he'll, you know, license to you or sell to you or whatever, and talking about the support and resistance levels, and he's expecting the stock to go sideways for a while, and so he wants to trade the stock. He wants to, you know, buy it and let it go up, sell it, let it go down, buy it, let it go up. So is this long-term prudent investments? No, this is speculation. This is trading. And, you know, I wish him well, but I think it's ridiculous, in my humble opinion. It's gambling. And you know, you might do well. Congratulations, you might do well. But for the most part, I don't think you're going to. But you might. Now, let's talk about the assignment sheet. The assignment sheet is a bonus assignment in Chapter 8. And again, we discussed this on Tuesday. All you have to do is act like you know what you're doing. That's all you have to do. You don't actually have to know what you're doing because I don't know what I'm doing. So, hey, what difference does that make? You could just explain it to me. So I'm going to use Yahoo's. And I don't know that I should continue to use Yahoo because I think Yahoo's would crash my system last time. But let's take a look at I was the presentation for the online students, obviously, and for you also. On the class website, it's in Canvas. If you're using Canvas and walking through Canvas to go do the assignments, come on, show all these. There it is, Procter & Gamble. So that's never happened to me before where Yahoo crashed my computer system really hard, but let's hope it doesn't happen again. We won't do it too long. So here, maybe you've used Yahoo in the past and you're familiar with this this page. This is the summary page. Hopefully you also went to the profile page. Read about the company, read where they're located. There's the description. Talks about the how much these guys get paid and gals get paid. The chairman got only $7.5 million, but he also got a bunch of stock options, almost $10 million in stock options. So don't feel too bad for Mr. Dale or David. Also tells you there, we asked about what sector the economy was in. But here's the one we're interested in, charting. Because they, along with many other internet-based providers of stock information and the like, give you some of the technical analysis. And when I mean some, they give you dozens and dozens of these indicators. So we're going to go to 5 year. We're going to stretch it out 5 years. Some people don't do anywhere near 5 years. They do, you know, 15 days or 10 days or 10 minutes. And then here are all the indicators that we look at them all. These are all technical indicators that have been created. Now, I don't know most all these. I know just a couple, and I don't get involved with any of them. The only one we're going to use is the most commonly used one, and that's moving average. People like tell me about these Bollinger Bands. They've explained it to me, and I'm not even going to use them because they just show the range of where it's going. What we're interested in is the moving average. So we're going to use the 50-day and the 200-day. Some people use the 15-day and the 50-day because there's more, it's a shorter time period, more opportunity for trading. So let's do that. Now, what does that do? What you see now is you see the blue, that's sort of a blue-green, that's the actual prices. But because we're going back 50 days, we're averaging the last 50 days, and that smooths out the volatility. So that's the purple. We're going to add on that the 200-day. So notice the 50-day is the default. And then we change the color so that it doesn't look exactly the same. Let's try this sort of burnt orange there. And so now, what do we see? The purple is the 50-day, and here's the 200-day moving average. When the 50-day goes below the 200-day, that's called the death cross. That's a bad sign. When the 50-day goes above the 200-day moving average, that's a good sign. That's called the golden cross. Don't ask me why, but that's what they call it. So now, in this case, and the D's here are all dividends, and Procter & Gamble's been paying dividends for decades. So notice here, the 50-day went below the 200-day average. Was that a good time to sell? Well, it turns out not really. And then here, the 50-day went above the 200-day average. Was that a good time to buy? Not really, because it just dropped a little bit, but not a whole lot. You know, this is not a big range. It's, you know, from 80 to 90. But here, the 50-day goes below the 200-day. That's supposed to be a good time to sell. Turns out that was an awful time to sell. Here, the 50-day goes above the 200-day, and yes, you did, you missed all this upside, as they call it, but at least you caught the next leg up. But now, look at that. Was the 50-day anywhere near the 200-day when the virus hit? No. So this is what technical analysis is like. And then you add, I don't know why you just, if you're interested in this, you do it. Add the Bollinger Bands, and it shows you the range, the support level and then the resistance level. And so that's technical analysis, and that's all I'm going to say about it. So you can do the bonus assignment in Chapter 8, and you too can be a technical analyst and convince me that you know what you're doing, even though you don't know what you're doing, because I don't know what you're doing, and I don't know what I'm doing. So you're going to convince me and get 10 points. How's that for a deal? But at the same time, hope you get a feel for what these people are doing, and maybe you'll be enticed to use them, the technical analysis. Who knows? So let's continue now. Here's the example of the 50-day going below. I'm sorry, which one's the? Oh, the 50-day is the red. Here's an example of the 50-day going above the 200-day moving average, and supposedly being a great time to invest. It turned out to be okay, not fabulous. The Dow theory is one of the more historically popular price movement technical theories, and I've had two different people explain it to me, and I still don't understand it. But supposedly by watching the changes in the primary and the secondary direction of the indexes, the Dow and the Dow Jones Transport, because remember, stuff has got to get to where it's going to be developed. You know, the raw materials have to get to where they're going to become into finished goods, and then they have to get to where they're sold. So people look at the transports and the regular Dow and supposedly determine what's going to happen. So here's a primary direction. That's the main direction. Then there's these secondary trends. And to me, it sounds like if the market doesn't go up or down, it'll go sideways. I mean, that's what it sounds like they're saying to you. And you'd say, oh yeah, I knew that. Relative strength is another measurement that is very popular with a company called Investor Business Daily. It was touted as it's still available. It's based in LA. It was touted as a competitor to the Wall Street Journal, but it never really caught on with most investors. The first place I worked at when I started in the industry, they were real big fans of the guy who started Investor's Business Daily, used his book called Can Slim or something like that, and so it just means how strong is your stock relative to the market, how weak is it, and Value Line has its own relative strength indicator. In the presentation you saw from Dan Fitzpatrick, he talked about volume. Volume is how many shares are traded. With large company stocks, there's often millions of shares traded a day because they have billions of shares. You know, Walmart has 3 billion shares or 6 billion shares. So you look at the volume, and heavy volume with prices rising is supposed to be a good sign. And if it's so it's prices are rising, but there's heavy volume, that's great, you know. But if it's low volume with prices falling, well, that's okay, okay? The prices can fall as long as it's not heavy volume. It's low volume, okay. But if it's heavy volume with prices falling, that's supposed to be bad. And if it's low volume with prices rising, that's supposed to be bad. Well, in other words, they're just telling you how many people are buying and selling the stock at any one time and coupling it with the price movements. And again, I would love to see long-term results of people who use this to buy and sell in the short term. I wish them a lot of luck. The breadth of the market, not respiration, but breadth. How many stocks went up? How many stocks went down? It's called the advanced decline ratio. You will hear the market will go up, and they'll say, well, you know, for every four stocks that went up, three stocks went down. So the advanced decline ratio was positive. When the mood is bullish, the advanced decline ratio should rise. Advancing issues will outnumber declining issues. And when the mood of the investors is bearish, the advanced decline ratio should fall. Declining issues will outnumber advancing issues. So again, there's another indicator that you can use to divine what's going on with the market as a whole or your individual stock. Now, the tick. What's the tick? It used to be that there was a ticker tape machine that would tell you what the prices were. So we call it the tick. And we did that when we did our simulation. We said, is the market going up? Is the price going up? Is it going down? So an uptick is supposedly a good sign. A bad downtick, that's a bad sign. If you want the stock to go up, sure. But we know going in that the market's going to be volatile. The market will fluctuate. I think I told you this story. I don't know. When people sometimes say, well, Frank, because they think I know what I'm talking about, right? Is the market going to crash? And I say, well, yeah. And they say, oh, what should we do? Nothing. You said the market's going to crash. I say, yeah, I know. Someday the market's going to crash. I don't know when. or they'll say, what's the market going to do? And this is not me. This is J.P. Morgan. You know, John Pierpont Morgan. You've heard of Morgan Stanley and J.P. Morgan Chase Bank. Mr. Morgan, what's the market going to do? And he said, the market will fluctuate. And some people will do that. I'll pull that one on people. What's it going to do? What do you think the market's going to do? I said, well, it'll go up and down. And they look at me and they say, well, I knew that. I said, well, why'd you ask me? Yeah, the market will go up and down, right? And so is it an opening tick? Is it bullish? Is a closing tick bearish? I don't know. I don't like it. And then short interest. Now, here is actually something that is useful. Not that useful for buying and selling individual stocks, but for your own emotions. This is called short interest. And what does that mean? Well, we made a real quick mention about shorting. And we're going to discuss it at the end of the semester. And I hope you don't do it. It's dangerous. You can lose a lot of money quickly. And what you're basically is doing is betting a stock or the market as a whole will fall. And so what we can do is take a look at how many shares have been shorted. That's called the short interest. The number of stocks sold short in the market at any given time. And so the more stocks are sold short, the more investors believe that the market's going to fall or the stock itself is going to fall. And for some reason, short investors are somehow considered more sophisticated and are therefore supposed to know when the market will fall. The problem is when you sell stocks short, you must buy them back. You don't have a choice. You can't hold them short forever. Whereas if you buy a stock as we think of buying it, in the hopes it goes up, you can hold it forever. And so eventually these people must buy their stock back. And don't worry about the mechanics of how it's done. We'll discuss it at the end of the semester, and hopefully you'll never do it. But it creates a pent-up demand for stocks. And that's where you hear people say it was a short squeeze. It squeezes these people like a spring. They push down the price, but it's only temporary. It's like pushing down on a spring, and then eventually, bingo, it jumps back up again. And that's called a short squeeze. So when you hear that short interest is at the highest level it's ever been, that means that eventually there's going to be a bang upward momentum. And that's when the market falls precipitously. People go, what do I do? I say, wait a couple of days. Just wait a couple of days, and then boom, it jumps back up again because all these short sellers have to turn around and buy back. And so, you know, that's short interest. And so I take that as a contrarian indicator. We call it contrarian, because if you see a lot of short interest, that's often a good sign, unless the world does end, in which case it doesn't matter. Now, odd lot trading. Again, the theory behind this stuff is suspect. I'd love to see people who use this and actually use it successfully. Plus, technology has made this odd lot trading commonplace. Remember we said that we wanted to see, or not we, but the people on the market who were in Wall Street doing the face-to-face trading, they wanted to see you buy in and sell in odd round lots, 100 share increments, whereas an odd lot was 17 shares or 87 shares, or a mixed lot, 120 shares. The first 100 was a round lot, and then the 20 was an odd lot. And supposedly, the small investors are doing the odd lot trading. And if odd lot trading rises, it supposedly means that more and more small investors are entering into the market, and small investors are supposedly notorious for getting into the market at the top. And again, I don't believe any of it. I think it's just somebody made it up and people started talking to one another and saying, oh yeah, that's how it works. I find that typically small investors who are in it for the long term do not panic. I talked to them and they said, well, did you sell? And of course not. I didn't sell. I held on. Whereas it's the institutional investors who are trading basically on behalf of their mutual fund or their other clients, they're the ones that often will have a 400% turnover. One of the students turned in a Chapter 4 assignment with a mutual fund. I forget CGM, I think it was. 400% turnover. And this wasn't if it was a money market fund, that'd be okay because, you know, they mature in 30 days, 90 days. Excuse me, but this was a stock mutual fund with a 400% turnover. That means they're holding the stock for typically 3 months. You know, four times a year they're selling their portfolio. That's not investing. Contrarian. Now, here's one, again, that can be useful if only for our own calming effect on our nerves. If people are very optimistic, that's a predictor of falling prices. Huh? Yeah, because they're all, I already bought all my shares. I'm waiting for the market to expand, to go up. And if people are very pessimistic, that's a predictor of rising prices. Why? Because they've already sold everything. And so it's uncanny how this works. There's a guy named Mark Hulbert who writes for MarketWatch and a few other places. And he keeps track of the pessimism and the optimism in the markets. And he publishes this letter showing that, you know what, people are really bullish now, market's going to fall. You know what, people are really pessimistic, the market's going to rise. So it's been uncanny, right, because we're at the bottom. If everyone's walking around, oh, the world is going to end, that's when it usually starts getting better. And everyone thinks, oh, blue skies. And so what we try to gauge is how many articles, at least I do, are optimistic, how many are pessimistic. And when you see a kind of mix of both, you kind of go, oh, okay, we're basically going to stick around what we're doing. But when you see people talking about, oh, it's going to be great, and then I go, oh, boy. But I don't change. It doesn't change my investing. It's just something for me to know about. We talked about the contrarian strategy back in Chapter 5. When you buy when others are selling, sell when others are buying. But the problem with this, and as we talked about, the one contrarian said, look, I can't do it all the time. You have to basically be willing to sit on your hands and wait for the right time to buy, right time to sell. The problem is the market historically has gone up three times more than it goes down. So if you were always selling when prices were going up, well, you'd soon not have any stocks at all. And then charting. And we already showed an example of of the gentleman, and we showed one on Tuesday. And all you got to do is into YouTube or any search engine, type in technical analysis charting, and you're going to see hundreds of thousands, millions of guys and gals posting their charting activity. There are different types of charts, the bar charts, the high-lows charts. These are the most popular ones, the chart formations that we'll take a look at in the next few slides. Here's the open high-low close bars. And so if you'd see red, that means the stock price went down that day. If it's black, it went up that day. The opening is the little tick on the left-hand side. The closing is a little tick on the right-hand side. And supposedly this is, oh, here it is, open, low, high, close. You're supposed to be able to divine what's going to happen in the future by looking at these things. And we saw them in the presentation. He didn't clue in on that, but he used these high, low, close charts. So here's the candlestick again. The black means it went up, and the red means it went down. The longer the body, oops, I might get that guy out of the way, the more bullish or bearish, right? If it's a long body and it's up, that's a good sign. And if it's a long body and it's going down, that's a bad sign. But tomorrow it'll be something completely different. So what the hell? And then here, Andres asked about the hanging man. But here's the dark cloud cover, right? It went up one day. It went down the next day. That's bad. Here's the bearish engulfing pattern. It went up the one day and then went down, oh, big time, the next day. And then there's harami. And I don't know what harami means in Japanese, but supposedly it's bad. So what are you going to do on day number three? I don't know. I want to buy a stock and hold it for at least 3 years, not 3 days. And then this is the only one, folks. This is the only one. This was 1998 when I took the Series 7, so most of you weren't even born yet. But in the Series 7, they asked one question when I took it about technical analysis. If I could identify the head and shoulders chart. Now, doesn't that look like a head and shoulders to you? Anyway, that's what they call it. And this is supposed to be a really bad sign. When you see a head and shoulders, it's supposed to be a really bad sign. I don't know if it is or not. I'd like to see the research behind it, but I've never seen any. Well, if you can show it, if you can find it, give it to me. And here are some other examples. Here's the resistance and the support level. The stock price goes up to the resistance level, falls back to the support level, up to the resistance level, back to the support level, up, down, until finally there's a breakout. This is a breakout on the upside. And here's the same thing, but it's a breakout on the downside because this is a head and shoulders. Now, why isn't this a head and shoulders? I don't know. But here, why is this a head and shoulders? Is that the head? There's the shoulder. And that's, yeah, I don't understand. And then, whoops, the triangles. Here are the triangles. And those are bad. And then here's the flag and the pennant, which is good. The flag is eh, but the pennant is good. And do you understand why all these are good or bad? Or I don't know. I don't. If you can, explain it to me. But here, this is a quote. A quote from a real live technical analyst. And this is from The Random Walk Down Wall Street. And I really do hope you'll read that book eventually, because he is a great, and One Up on Wall Street, because they both have a great sense of humor. So let's read together. The market's rise after a period of reaccumulation is a bullish sign. Nevertheless, fulcrum characteristics are not yet clearly present, and a resistance area exists 40 points higher in the Dow. So it is clearly premature to say the next leg of the bull market is up. If, in the coming weeks, a test of the lows holds and the market breaks out of its flag, a further rise would be indicated. Should the lows be violated, a continuation of the intermediate-term downward trend is called for. In view of the current situation, it is a distinct possibility that traders will sit in the wings and awaiting a clearer delineation of the trend, and the market will move in a narrow trading range. Now, do you understand what this guy just said? I think he said, if the market does not go up or down, it will remain unchanged. I mean, that's what it... again, this is... But this guy's making a whole lot more money than I am, so who am I to complain or cast dispersions on his ability to BS. I mean, to explain why the market will go up or down or remain unchanged. And again, this is from The Random Walk Down Wall Street. So what I want to show you, dear students, now hopefully it won't crash. I don't know if it was an excuse that crashed the system. I'm going to minimize this. I'm going to minimize that. And I'm going to go to excuse Where did it go? Ah, there it is. On the website is a spreadsheet that I created. I didn't do it in excuse, but I... Oh, document recovery. Close. Okay. The market... No, remove the files. Add the files. Save. I need it. Okay. Okay. So let's now get this guy up here. Now I'm going to share. Stop the share. Stop the share. And then I'm going to share screen the Excel spreadsheet. Okay. I did it. I didn't do it in Excel, but I translated it to Excel. And so I have a little bit of, well, actually it was a lot, but it was a long time ago, experience with statistics. I'm sorry, statistics and simulation. And I loved it when I did it. It was a long time ago. And so here is a simulation that I created. And you can download it. It's on the website. And what this is, folks, it starts off at a year ago at $50. It's a hypothetical make-believe stock. And so what we did is we came up with a statistically sound method to basically emulate what happens to a stock over a year. And it's total random number generation, right? But it mimics, excuse me, it mimics stock prices in the short term. So here we see a pattern of the stock basically going up to about a little over 60 and then back down again in a trading range, the technical analysis would tell you. Well, all you do is press function key 9 and you get a whole different graph. And this one started off bullish but then has been on a downward slide ever since. You press function key 9 again and this one's had a bad time and they got some bad news. But now here's this resistance level, the support level, the resistance level, the support level. And what we are actually doing is simply coming up with random events, random graphs of what happens to stocks. And we know this to be true. I tell you, unless you believe I'm lying, this is totally made up. This is totally using random number generation and statistics. And I don't want to go into the mechanics. It's called a, what's it called now? Cumulative distribution. The inverted cumulative distribution function that uses random number generation to model stuff in the real world. Okay? But even when these technical analysts were given these graphs, and told purely that they're totally randomly generated, they will see these patterns. And that's because we're humans. We superimpose a pattern. We're heuristic. It's called heuristic thinking. We superimpose a pattern even though we might have been told or we know that there's no pattern to be had. And if you hold down the function key 9 key repeatedly, what you start to see is something that if some of you were in the military or ever worked with electronics, it's called white noise. It basically washes itself out and becomes completely random over short periods of time. So you see, that's what I believe technical analysis are guilty of, technical analysts are guilty of. They are superimposing something that they've been told or they believe, or I don't know where the research is, show it to me, that is going to help them divine what's going to happen in the future. And the reality is it's total borscht. It's not real. So any questions, any thoughts? Am I going too fast? Let's stop the share and go back to the... Oops. No, here it is. Here it is, the presentation. Okay. So let's continue. That's so much for technical analysis. But again, as I said, 10 quick points, not quick. I want you to take a little bit of time playing with them, learning about them, and who knows, you might be convinced that you can use it. Our last slide, I think it's our last slide, yeah, is, again, an exhortation, fancy word for saying, please think about it, about a career in the world of investments. Because I've got to tell you, folks, I really love it. Have you figured that out yet? It's exciting. It's not like accounting. Okay, it is not cut and dried. It is incredibly dynamic. It's always changing. You'll never run out of things to search and research and learn about. And to me, that's cool. The tough part is breaking into the industry. But it's really not that tough. It's really not that difficult. You don't have to start as a registered representative, also known as a stockbroker or a financial representative. There are just dozens of places for you to plug into the industry. You know, dealing with certain clients can be really, really problematic. You know, some of them are just, they just drive you up a wall. But there's just a few. And you got to treat them just like every other client. In fact, you have to treat them better than all the other clients. But most clients, you know, they're really, you know, the people who need your help are usually very appreciative. And I explained to them, you know, as I said back in Chapter 4, I don't think the new model of hitting people with 1.5% a year is in their best interest. So I'm a bit of a definitely old-fashioned way. But there's other ways to make money. There's other ways to get jobs in the industry. Now, how do you get in the industry? Well, it used to be difficult to get your broker's license. You had to be sponsored by a brokerage firm. They're going to do a background check. They're literally going to contact the FBI. You're going to do your fingerprints and do a background check, make sure you haven't done any shenanigans with other people's money. You normally take the Series 7 and the Series 63. The Series 7 is the tough one. That's the tough one. It's not impossible, but people often flunk it the first time because they don't respect what they're told. It's really 6 or 7 or 8 exams in one exam. Now, you don't see the different sections. You just see 120 questions come at you in the morning, 3 hours, and then you get an hour for lunch, and then 3 hours in the afternoon, another 120 questions. But in those questions are 7 different parts, and you have to get each one with 70%. And the tricky ones are options, shorting, buying on margin. And those are the ones that people tend to not study hard enough, and they're the ones they tend to fail. The Series 63 is much easier. It's a couple of weeks of study. But you have to study for the Series 7 2 hours a day for 2 months. Really, really. Study 1 to 2 hours a day for 2 months, and you'll do it. Now, here's the problem. You had to be sponsored by a brokerage firm, and many brokerage firms were reticent to hire someone until they know they can actually pass the Series 7. So they would go look for the people who are from the best schools and stuff. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to be a good... folks who recruit people will be the first to tell you, hey, just because they're from the best schools doesn't mean they're going to be a good broker. So you can do it with a 2-year degree or less. Now, the cool part is the FINRA and the industry understands that the Series 7 is just too much to ask people to get the first time. So and getting sponsored is not easy. So for that reason, they now have this Securities Industry Essentials exam, this guy right here. And you can take it without getting sponsored. You don't have to do the background check. The Series 7 costs several hundred dollars to take. Usually you don't pay that. The brokerage firm will pay it for you. But when I took it, it cost about $500. Now I'm sure that was 25 years ago. More. No, 22 years ago. Whereas now the SIE costs like $60, $70. One of our students took it and told me, and I forget what number it was. But you can do it. Think about it. Contact me. I love to talk about this because the industry needs more women. They know this. They need more minorities. They know this. They need bilingual. They love ex-military. Why? Because it's a very structured, regulated environment. And who better than people who worked in the military? Because anybody who works in the military will tell you, it's a very structured life. And so people who thrive in that situation will thrive in the industry. Okay, and that is our discussion of stocks, dear students. We are done stocks. And we are ready for next week after the exam. Bonds. Boring bonds. Stodgy bonds. Reliable bonds. Okay. So any questions on Chapter 8? Any questions on the... Okay, so let's discuss the exam. Any questions on the exam? Let's go back, stop share, and see who we got.
What day's the exam exactly?
Okay, the exam will start tonight at 6 o'clock. All right? And then you can take it anytime until Sunday night. Now, please do not wait until Sunday night to take the exam. All right? In fact, there's two parts. The first part is multiple choice, true, false, and that's like a Scantron portion. The second part is a take-home, basically. It will be calculations like Chapter 17, where you go. There'll be a balance sheet and an income statement for you to download or look on the screen, and then you will pick out the numbers, the net income and the sales revenue, the top line number, the total revenue, and then pick out current assets and current liabilities, and you'll calculate, I think, like six or eight, I think it's six, financial ratios. So you'll need the Chapter 17 formula sheet. It'll be there. Don't worry. All the documents will be there. And then there'll be at least one question, constant perpetual growth model from Chapter 6, and a discounted cash flow model from Chapter 6. So you'll need the Chapter 6 formula sheet. You'll need the present value tables. They're all there. And then we're going to ask you some essay questions. Short essay. Don't worry about being perfect. What I find is some students just, they just leave it blank. They just leave it blank, and you don't understand. Assuming you don't just say, screw you, Payano, I'm not doing this. Whatever you write, I'm going to accept. Assuming you wrote it without malice, you just wrote, if you say, I don't feel comfortable at all answering this question, but here's what I think it should be. Great. That would be fine. Because I find that students are just terrified to write anything thinking that it's not going to be good enough. But don't worry about it. It's going to be good enough. You're going to do well. I think so. So there'll be some short essay and do the best you can. Okay, now, so did I answer that question? I hope I did. Okay, now, we don't really have time. We have about 20 minutes. Everybody stretch. Stretch, everybody. So what I would like to do, I don't know. I was wondering, should we go through a couple of do you want to do the Chapter 6 constant perpetual growth model and the discounted cash flow models? Because the other ones, the Chapter 17 ones, I think, are pretty straightforward, folks. Let's look at what's in the chat room here. Where's the chat? There's the chat. Oops, that was my cat. Would you consider COVID-19 effects on the market as a technical aspect? Says Giuseppe Luna. I don't think so. Technical indicators are something that can be calculated, but I don't know. I'm not a big technical analysis fan. The COVID, we often call this an exogenous or external effect on the market. Something, yeah, and it had the COVID-19, that has nothing to do with our economy, how it works and how people trade and, the goods and services across the globe. It was a monkey wrench that somebody threw into the system, and now we have to deal with it. So I don't know if I'd call it a technical aspect. I'd call it like I'd lump it in there with tsunamis and earthquakes and meteorites, things that sometimes are called acts of God that humans had nothing to do with, other than humans are basically responsible for it because we've been doing all this animal husbandry, and we start eating things like supposedly, for example, AIDS came from people eating monkeys raw. If they cooked them, it wouldn't have got into people, but they ate them raw. And so the same thing is true with the common cold actually came from horses. I think it's or camels or something like that. You know, it jumped from species to species, and that's because we're in the last 10,000 years we've been domesticating all different types of animals. So now we're catching the bird flu. We're catching them from birds. Okay, so I'm going to go to the worksheet, and I want to go through these constant perpetual growth models again because we're just spinning our wheels here. So let's go to the guy right here. Yeah, okay, good. So now here's my website. Here's Wonder Professor. Remember that all the materials here, you know that. So we're going to go down and notice it tells you when the next exam is. See, you have Thursday, April 16th at 6 o'clock today to Sunday 19th at 11. But remember, Canvas will kick you out at 11:59 or 11:55. If you're in the middle of the exam at that time, boom, it'll kick you out. So contact me. If a lot of people have, my computer died Sunday night. Okay, then take it Monday. But don't count on it. Try to do it by Saturday. So let's go down to Chapter 6. Chapter 6. And let's do worksheet number 2. Now, I used a alternative account in Google because I wanted to show you what you're going to see. Now, some of you have already figured out how to do this. You are in view mode, right? And some people will request edit access. No, don't do that because I'll send you back an email saying, no, this is my document. You can make a copy of it or download it as. So you do file, download as, if you use Word, or maybe LibreOffice or OpenOffice. But really, the cool thing to do is to have a Gmail account, because they give it to you for free, and make a copy, and then I'll continue to use the incredibly original copy of Chapter 6 worksheet. And now, what you find is now you have all the access. This is your document now. You can do whatever your little heart desires with it. And so let's make it a little bit bigger. And this is from Chapter 6, no price ratio models. Here's the zero growth model. We're not going to do that one, but we're going to do both of these. We're going to do the constant perpetual model and the discounted cash flow model. So if we go now back to the website, and now let's open up the, where is it? Formula sheet. Open a new tab. Oops, get this guy down a little bit. Open a new tab. Oh, that was a mistake. Where is it? Come on, where is it? There it is. There they are. So this one right here. Here's the models. So this is these two models. There's the constant perpetual growth model is the one we're going to do here. So I'm going to put that in here. And it's very straightforward. You take the annual dividends, whatever they're paying, and then times 1 plus the constant dividend growth rate, and then do that first, then do the bottom, required rate of return minus the constant dividend growth rate, and then do the division. So we see that they're paying $2.18. Whoops, that's not where I want to do that. Okay, I want to do it down here. Come on, sweetheart. There we go. $2.18 times 1 plus the growth rate. And the growth rate has been about 6%. And then we should really put parentheses around these if we're going to do it on one line. Divided by the required rate of return, which we're saying 9%, minus the dividend growth rate. So 9%. Minus 6%. So let's break that down. This becomes, everybody understands that this becomes 1.06, right? 1.06, everybody understand that? If not, contact me. Now where's my calculator? Come here, calculator. Come on, calculator. Group D. $2.18 times 1.06. Put that in parentheses. divided by, this becomes 0.09 minus 0.06. Everybody understand how this 6%, 9% minus 6% became this guy? So 2.18 times 1.06, I get 2.3108. And then I can do this in my head. 9 minus 6% is 0.03. If I can type. So divide that by 0.03, and I get about $77.03. Actually, it's 266666. So now the dividend, the place, it's selling for $117 a share. I don't know what it's selling for now. It's fallen. This was done back in February. But we say, ooh, you know what? We probably can't expect to get 9% from waste management. But again, do we put any credence in these numbers? No. These numbers are just there to tilt us in the direction. And if we simply changed our expected rate of return to 7%, if we just said, you know what? Well, it's, you know, they're like a utility. They're picking up trash. Let's just change it to 7%. Then this turns into 0.01, and now all of a sudden, you're looking at $231. $231 and whatever. 8 cents. So you see the huge differentiation in our values simply by changing our required rate of return. And that these models are very, very sensitive to the required rate of return. Now, the discounted cash flow model, you cannot, please learn how to do this now if you haven't done it. Those of you who did it perfectly, my apologies. I'm not trying to belittle you. I'm just saying there's a lot of people who didn't even bother doing this one, or if they did it, they didn't do it right. And so what we do with these guys, we like to use a table. And let's go to the formula sheet just to take a look at. The formula just says, you know how to do this? You take the dividend from year number one times the present value multiplier for year number one, dividend plus year number two, so that's the present value multiplier for year number two, and so on and so forth. And then at the end, you use the expected price of the stock. So, but we like to see the table because it makes life a lot easier. So let's insert a table because it just makes life easier. We need 4 columns and 5 rows. I'm going to snazz it up just a little bit, not much. And so we have the years here, the future cash flows, what do we think we're going to have come from the ownership of this stock, the present value multipliers for, in this case, we want 11%. And then what are the discounts? Andres, is that you? Andres, somebody turn off your audio. Discounted cash flows. So this is what we expect to see. And after using the present value multipliers, we then can determine what we think it's worth today. That was a mistake. Okay, so let's make it all nice and centered. Did I do that right? Yeah. Let's center it just to make nice. Okay. So we're going to do 2020, 2021, 2022. And we said that, oh, this is Yum Brands, right? And we said we don't think that they're going to be increasing their dividends as they were before. They've been increasing their dividends actually pretty smartly, but they're probably going to have to take a pause with that. So $1.88 in this year, $2 in next year, and then next year we expect $2.12 from the dividends. Plus, we go to Value Line or we do our own forecast, remembering that this is all funny numbers. These are all squishy and we're just putting our finger, licking our finger and putting it up in the air and seeing which way the wind blows. We expect the stock price at the end of 2022 to be $110. So that's $2.12, $110, that's I can do that in my head. 112, 12. Everybody understand what we just did here? This is going to make our life a lot easier because we don't have to do two calculations. We can do it in one calculation. And it also allows us to use the spreadsheet, which we won't really have time to do, but we can do it afterwards. I'm going to have an office hour afterwards, so if you have questions, stick around for the next hour. We'll have an office hour tonight for the online students, 7:30 to 8:20. So, and of course, contact me, and if those are times are not good for you, we'll make a time. Now, we have to go get the present value multipliers. So let's go to the present value multiplier table. And here are the three multipliers for 11%. 0.909, 0.812, and 0.731. And let's see if I can remember that. 0.909, 0.832, and 0.721. I don't remember. Oops. 731. And this is 812. Nice, I got them. Okay, so there are the present value multipliers. And again, if you saw the spreadsheet does that for you. You don't have to do that. So let's get my rusty calculator out, trusty calculator. And $1.88 times 0.909 is $1.70892. And then $2 times 0.812 is $1.624. And then 112.12 times 0.731 is $81.95972. And now, here's where some people in the online class and the face-to-face class did not add up the three numbers. They just gave me this number. They said, here it is. And they said, no, it's all three of them. So you add these three together. 1.708 plus 1.624. And you get approximately 85.29264. We're not worried about precision. So we say approximately $85.29. And so we see that it's selling for $89. Well, 85, our present value is less than the current market price. Oops. So we're not that excited about the stock. But of course, all we have to do is change our rate of return to 9% or 10% or 8%. And you'll see that, you know what, this isn't too bad. So that's the effect of the required rate of return. And as we said at the end of Chapter 6, do we put any credence in these numbers? After we've gone through these models, we throw all the numbers away. And we've done much more research than that. We've done the financial ratio analysis, make sure that they're liquid, that they're not going to go into bankruptcy. We've read everything we can read, the annual report and the like. And we say, yeah, I would like to buy this. I'd like to own this stock. We look at their competitors, McDonald's and the other companies that are in this business of selling you garbage. I mean, food that is salt, sugar, and fat. And then we decide, yeah, I think I'd like to own Yum Brands, or no way. Now, some of you might have ethical issues like my wife. Don't you dare buy McDonald's or Yum Brands. Yes, dear. And that's the key to a long-lasting marriage. Do everything your wife tells you to do and don't keep any loaded firearms in the house. Yes. All right, so we're about ready to finish. Any questions on anything about the exam? Any questions on anything about the exam? So I don't hear any questions. That wasn't me. That was... It was your cat. Okay. Sorry, Andres. Somebody's cat is giving them hardship. Okay, so we're finished for today. Thank you so much, everyone. Really appreciate it. And Patricia, is that Patricia Bejarano? I see Patty there. Yes, I think that's her.
I'm here.
Okay, good. Thank you. Were you able to sneak out of your one class?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so again, we'll stick around. Those of you who want to stick around, but I'm going to meow. I'm going to stop the recording, but it will help anybody who wants to go through Chapter 6, Chapter 17, Chapter 8, 7, and 9. So thank you all. Take care. Bye-bye.